Okay. So my name is V Bellinger and I am 21. Today is the day after St. Patty's Day, which is March 18th. Yeah, March 18th. And I'm speaking with my supervisor, with Elizabeth, who is my supervisor at one of the jobs that I hold. And we are recording this interview in Fort Collins, Colorado. So Elizabeth, do you want to start with, I guess, just telling us a little bit about yourself, whatever you want to share? You don't have to say your age. It's interesting that they asked me to say my age, but I just said it, so.
I was wondering if I had to share that, actually. Mm-hmm. I guess, hi, I am Elizabeth Amoa Abua. I use she, her pronouns. Mm. I will not share my age because I don't want to. I'm originally from Ohio, grew up in Dayton, Ohio, and then lived in Tucson, Arizona for 6 years, and I'm on my second year, in Colorado. Other stuff about me, this is so hard, I never know where to go. I'm like, do people want to know?
Do you have pets?
I do have a pet. Mm-hmm. My dog's name is Bug, and she is the love of my life.
Nice.
I make jokes about how I love her more than my partner. My mom told me when I was going to get a dog that many people love their dogs more than their partners, and I was like, this is concerning. But then I got a dog anyway, and here we are. let's see, what else? I studied psychology and public health. I used to be really into sports. I was like a big sports person in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What sports?
What sports didn't I play?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Is that surprising?
I don't know. Now I'm thinking about your energy in general, and I'm like, I can see you being, like, enough for sports.
Oh, I was very into sports. Yeah. Still very competitive as a result. Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
the first question that I have is, do you feel like your job is your calling? Why or why not? And if not, what do you believe is your calling?
That's a really good / big question.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's definitely at least my calling for right now and for the next few to several years.
Mm-hmm.
Did it ask why? Is that the question? Why not? Okay, thank you. I would say, I don't know. I definitely felt like it was just kind of a natural progression. I actually, whenever I tell the story, I always frame it around like I kind of fell into it because I feel like I did.
Mm-hmm.
I had an internship. So I was just looking for an internship during my grad program that I really wanted to do, and was watching someone else present their research from their internship that they'd already completed and was like, wow, this is really interesting. Can you tell me more about it? And then she was like, oh, I should introduce you to my supervisor. And so that's how I just kind of stumbled into it.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, after just about everyone else had found an internship and I was like desperate for one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized it was interesting, as I was on my way to the interview, I was talking to my dad on the phone, and I was like, Dad, I feel like there's so many nuances I don't understand. He's like, well, you know, rape is bad. And I was like, I mean, I feel like there's a lot more to it than that, but like, I guess you're right, thanks. and so, come to find out, I was right that there's a lot more to it. And so as I was doing the work, it was Relationship Violence Programs was the name of the place.
Mm-hmm.
I became like, because people would ask, what's your internship, right? And so I would tell them, and then that's where I got like a lot of disclosures.
Mm-hmm.
Because with that visibility, people are like, oh, I can tell this person my story. And so that's when I realized how many people around me that I would have never suspected were survivors. And I realized not only statistically the breadth of the issue, but like also like, I think more tangibly, and I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but basically how much it just really impacted me emotionally, realizing how many people this was impacting. Anyway, so that really ignited like a fire and a passion for me. And so I still very much have that fire and passion as I've done more and more of this work.
Mm-hmm.
It just keeps growing. And so what do I see? I guess I don't really know long term, like super long term, if I will continue to have that passion, because it's just so, it can be exhausting at times.
Yeah.
But I definitely, I feel like I'm umming a lot. But I definitely plan to be here and in this work for the next few to several years because of that passion, that fire.
Nice.
Long answer to your question.
No, that's fine.
Did you want to repeat the question?
Oh. The second question is, are there any lessons your work life has taught you?
That is also an excellent question. I feel like it has taught me a lot of lessons.
Mm.
I feel like especially with this work, there's a lot of learning on the fly. I also don't know that I explicitly stated what I do.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So what I do, for context, I'm the Assistant Director of Educational Programs at the Women and Gender Advocacy Center here at CSU.
Colorado State University.
Yeah. Boom. No acronyms. Killing it. And I also do some victim advocacy as needed. Anyway, but yeah, so... what was the question again? Are there any lessons? Yeah, so I think there's a lot of lessons. I've definitely learned... I almost cussed. I have definitely learned a lot of patience. because I think with this work more than any other job or potential career path that I almost went into, I have found that you have to have so much patience in this because it's not only people, like in the advocacy realm, when people are coming in and someone's experienced this trauma and you just have to sit there and listen and hold space for them because sometimes this is the only time they've ever had a chance to take up space,
mm-hmm.
or at least in this way take up that kind of space. And then I think also, so just like a lot of like being comfortable with silence, being comfortable with just listening and having a lot of patience too, I think, because there are so many people that do go back to their perpetrators. And so having a lot of patience with them going through their own process, because telling someone what to do never
works.
I mean, not necessarily never, I guess, but rarely,
mm-hmm.
definitely works with getting them the right supports for them and getting them out of that situation. So patience in that respect. And then I think also in terms of being a supervisor, a lot of patience, because especially in this work as well, a lot of people that come to the work as students in general, but as students often are survivors as well. So it's not only trying to hold space for them and be patient because they're survivors, but also because students and employees are learning.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a dual role in that sense where it's holding patience for them as survivors and as people that are learning and coming into their own professional identity.
That was a good answer to that question.
Oh, thank you. I was like, patience feels cheesy.
So our third question is, can you tell me about someone who has mentored you?
Yeah, so I find this question interesting because when I think of what a mentor should be based on my perception of the definition,
mm-hmm.
I think of like this person that like really calls you in and helps you grow and like is really invested in your growth. But when I think of who has mentored me, it's a lot of like former supervisors that I'm not a fan of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think of it in terms of that definition, but I do think that they really helped me with my growth based on the things that I saw or that I witnessed from them that I did not want to mimic or mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And then also in terms of, I think, ways that they impacted me that helped me really figure out how, not only to like self-care as a human, but I think also to figure out other avenues of support. So recognizing, I guess it really helped me realize how large my support system was at the time,
mm-hmm.
because I really did need help in some of the situations.
Because mm-hmm.
I would even describe, not all of them, but definitely like one or two as toxic workspaces.
Mm-hmm.
And so knowing that, like that definitely is a way where, again, those people that were creating that environment definitely would not fall under the umbrella of mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they definitely helped me grow in a way that a mentor, like hopefully the outcome would like lead to a lot of growth in that way. So let's see. Yeah, and I think also speaking to that, like with the support system piece, I think it was well, you know, they always say, what is it, like, it takes a village. Mm-hmm. And so I think for that reason, they were kind of like my village, even though I wasn't like a kid anymore. Mm-hmm. I think of the people that I did go to for support. So there was someone that in another office of mine that I used to work at as an undergrad, where when I was working at this one of the places that I did not have a great time at, who I would go to sometimes, and they called her the mama of the office. I don't know if I said that. Mm-hmm. But so I went to talk to her about some of these things, and just having her, like, her immense amount of support while I was going through it, whether or not she had advice for specific situations, that was so helpful, just having a place, having someone hold that space for me. Mm-hmm. And then I think also, just like, again, not mentorship, but just having your friends there for support, it really helps you realize who your community is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, not in the vein I'm sure this question meant, but I feel like that's how I kind of, without a formal mentor, kind of came around to a lot of growth.
Nice. Okay, so our last question is, are there any funny stories people tell about you from when you were growing up?
Yeah, so I think my dad always has all the funny stories in true, I think, stereotypical dad fashion. Mm. There's two stories he loves to share that he always says he's going to share at my wedding, which I don't really understand why that's where he wants to share it or why he also assumes I'm getting married. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. So the first one, which I especially don't understand why he would share at a wedding. But apparently when I was really little, like a toddler, I still would use my, like, Binky or pacifier. Mm-hmm. And one day I got really sick, and he was so tired. He was sick and tired of me having this Binky. And so I, like, I guess I threw up or something. He's like, you know why that happened? And I was like, why? And he's like, that Binky right there. And so I guess I, like, instantly took it out of my mouth and threw it away. Mm-hmm. And he's just, like, so proud of that moment, and I find it so weird and so funny. Like, I wish he was here to tell it, because if you could hear, like, the, like, pride in his voice for, like, convincing me to do that, and also that I was, like, this kid that was like, oh, like, with this information, I should throw away the Binky. Yes. Like, he's just, like, so proud of that, and it's really funny. And then the other story, or I think I lost it. What was it? Okay, so the other one is when, I don't know how old I was, but I was, like, probably around 5 years old. I went to him, and he asked what I wanted to do when I grew up. And he, I forget what I said I wanted to do. He's like, oh, do you want to be a doctor? Mm-hmm. Like, shout out to immigrant parents. That's always what they want you to do, right? Mm-hmm. But so he asked me if I wanted to be a doctor. And I said, no, Dad, only men can be doctors. Mm-hmm. And he, to this day, whenever he tells this story, is, like, flabbergasted that I would ever think that, you know, which is, like, cool and also
just, like, society.
Yeah, like, speaks to his lack of awareness that, like, a little kid at the age of 5 would already pick up on these, like, gender norm stuff that's out there. Anyway, he tells it like he just, like, gave me the most epic worldly information or something, and he's like, Elizabeth, women can be doctors as well. They don't have to just be nurses, because I think I said something about wanting to be a nurse if mm-hmm. I went into the medical field. And so he thinks that story is really funny. And I think, actually, to me, it's a little funny based on the work I do now. Mm-hmm. The fact that I ever was like, oh, like, a girl can't do these things.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I, like, do gender equity work. So that's a little funny in that respect. But, you know.
Yeah.
Nice. That's all I got.
Well, thank you for sharing those. Is there anything, I guess, any last things you would want to say or add on about the universe?
That's a great question. Apparently all of your questions are great today, because I keep saying that. I don't know that I have anything profound, but I hope that after listening to this, people, to maybe on some level, feel empowered to maybe do some more gender equity work. You know, I talked a little bit about how it was hard. And it is, but I think it's also the most rewarding thing that I've ever done. Mm-hmm. So not only is it hard because you're going out there and definitely having to give a lot of yourself to others, mm-hmm. and it's also very rewarding for the self as well, just knowing that you're making that kind of impact, mm-hmm. or hopefully making that kind of positive impact. Yeah. So yeah, that's all I got.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.